It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 2 years ago, we took a look at the world of urban farming in Pittsburgh with a focus on beekeeping in particular. As in many cities, those who want to build apiaries in Pittsburgh have had to jump through various bureaucratic hoops and deal with the myths and fears surrounding honeybees. But with the honeybee population rapidly diminishing, President Obama recently stressed the importance of preserving our honeybee populations for the sake of food security. The White House has even announced plans to form a task force to investigate honeybee colony collapse. And now there is renewed attention locally on the decline of pollinators. I'm joined now in Studio A by Steve Rapaski. He's president of Berg Bees. Steve Rapaski, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us by phone is David Tarpey. He is professor and extension apiculturist in the Department of Entomology at North Carolina State. David Tarpey, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Steve, let's start with you. It's been about 2 years since you last talked with us about beekeeping in Pittsburgh. What can you tell me about the status of the city's urban agriculture laws?
Well, the laws are still where they were 2 years ago. That's a good thing and a bad thing, depending on how you look at it. We are certainly working, we have our own task force, if you will, between Grow Pittsburgh, Berg Bees, and the Pittsburgh Pro Poultry people, working with the mayor's office to revamp the ordinance, so to speak, in that we've had some hurdles that we've had to get over. And the hurdles are basically that the ordinance is cost prohibitive, the permit. So people can apply, but due to these myths and fears of stinging insects and the process that we have to go through to get the permit, essentially going through a zoning hearing board, people can show up at that hearing and, you know, state some fears or facts or whatever they want. And the trend has been that the permits have been denied at that point. So we're working with the mayor's office to kind of revamp the ordinance, possibly repeal it, rewrite it. And it's a long process. We've gone through a change in the mayor's office for the better as far as urban agriculture is concerned. And we're taking baby steps, and our goal is to totally revamp it so that it's basically by right type of issue, so that people can keep bees, keep chickens, as long as they're following a basic set of rules.
And the rules, again, all the hoops that someone needs to jump through to be a beekeeper, for example, are, you know, there's a licensing process, and what else?
There's a licensing process. We encourage them to take a class. You have to go in front of the zoning board to have a hearing to state that you have the proper setbacks, you have the proper amount of square footage on your property, you know, all these little things that just kind of tie up the process. And a simple thing of keeping bees and chickens turns into something very complicated.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. What questions do you have about beekeeping and apiaries in Pittsburgh? And what concerns do you have about the decline in the honeybee population and how it impacts our food security? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. David Tarpey, what do you know about the task force being established by the White House?
Well, very little at this point. I mean, I think the proclamation came out. It's a really positive move, I think. But where it trickles down and where the rubber meets the road is yet to be seen. But I think there's kind of unanimous consent that anything that can be done to highlight the problems that honeybees in particular, but really all pollinators, have been experiencing is very, very crucial, and so very welcomed.
And explain, you know, it's something I think a lot of people take for granted, what honeybees do and the impact that they have on our food supply. Talk about, you know, some of what has changed since, I believe it was in the 40s, that the honeybee population was about 6 million, and now it's down to 2.5, something like that. That's a drastic decline. What does that mean to our food supply?
Well, those figures come from the National Agricultural Statistics Service, which tracks the number of managed beehives. And so with the loss of the family farm, changes in demographics, and of course, a lot of the plights and plagues of honeybees themselves. They've dwindled from about 6 million post World War II to about 2.5 or so million today. And so those are managed colonies that are kept by beekeepers. And so there's a whole lot of factors that go into that decline. I think what most people are thinking of when they hear colony collapse or the other aspects of honeybee decline are the problems that beekeepers and their honeybees have been facing because of these introduced exotic diseases, parasitic mites, and lots of other problems that they've been experiencing keeping our current honeybee population healthy. And so those two things are kind of on different time scales and due to many different reasons. But really what we need is a sustainable, reliable population of pollinators, because honeybees have been estimated to be responsible for about a third of everything we eat through their mechanism of pollination of about 100 different crops that we rely on every day.
And what are some of the things that we could possibly see shortages of as a result of this?
Well, things like all cucurbits, cucumbers, melons, most of the berries, strawberries, blueberries, on and on. A lot of nut crops, almonds, for example, are 100% reliant on honeybees for the most part. Even things that you might not think about, to a certain extent, alfalfa seed that is used to then make hay to feed to cattle. So even like our dairy industry in a very indirect way can be reliant on honeybees. And so all of those things coming together, about a third of everything we eat, and really about 80% of the healthy things, the fun things that we eat in our typical Western diet, rely on pollination, on insect pollination, primarily honeybees.
And can the efforts of someone like Steve Rapaski here in Pittsburgh, does that help with trying to stem the decline of the honeybee population?
I believe so, and I really applaud Steve for his efforts and other kind of urban agriculture efforts that are out there, and honeybees are and beekeeping is really kind of a gateway into that, because there's really something very tangible about keeping a hive of bees, and even one or two hives in an area, you know, you have 50,000 bees in a colony, and they can forage up to 3-4 miles away, covering, you know, about 50 square miles. And so, you know, clearly a single honeybee colony doesn't pollinate everything within that area, but it certainly helps. And so, you know, if you see honeybees in your backyard because of these problems that they've been experiencing in the wild, there are not nearly as many feral colonies, those living in tree cavities or other places. If you see honeybees in your backyard, you can almost certainly thank a neighboring beekeeper.
So there are some real benefits of beekeeping, even in urban areas like here in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
412-246-2002. If you want to join the conversation with Steve Rapaski, who is a local beekeeping expert here in Pittsburgh, and also David Tarpey, professor and extension apiculturist in the Department of Entomology at North Carolina State University. Let's go to the phones. Lots of people that want to get in on this conversation. We'll start with Jonathan downtown. Jonathan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Jonathan.
Yeah, I was wondering, I know there's an environmental benefit to keeping the bees. Is there a financial benefit as well?
Steve, I'll throw that one to you.
If you could see me now, I'm laughing. The financial benefit for the average hobby beekeeper who keeps anywhere from 2 to 4 hives is very, very minimal. Most beekeepers do it because of the love of the bees. They certainly will get some honey off of it. But the average beekeeper, you're not going to be making a living off of it. It might be pocket change. And, you know, basically, you keep bees to make what? More bees, and you make that money to keep more bees. So,
what is the enjoyment for you? You don't make any money. You get some honey out of the deal, but it doesn't sound like that's what this effort is all about. So, what do you get out of it?
It's depending on who you talk to. Some people use it to relax. And it's hard to think that playing with stinging insects would be relaxing, but it certainly is relaxing. It's a hobby, you know, just like anything else, woodworking, crocheting, you name it. People get, personally, their own little, you know, excitement out of it. I enjoy working the bees. Every time I open up the hive, I learn something new. I see something new. I hear something new in those hives. I'm one of the bigger beekeepers. I'm keeping over 50 hives in the Pittsburgh area. But for the average backyard beekeeper, if they make enough honey to give to friends and family for Christmas, they're happy. It's something different. They're benefiting the environment. They're doing it because they appreciate their flowers, their gardens. It's environmentally based. So financially, we're not going to get rich off of it, but we certainly are doing it for the right reasons.
And what's a new thing, say, that you've learned in the last couple days when you looked into the hive? I'd be interested to know what it might be.
Well, the one thing, it varies. Reading every time you read a beehive, when you open up and you look at the frames, you might see one thing one week and suspect something, and the next week the bees have corrected it, and it goes to show you that all the books that we write, the bees don't read them. They do what they want. They know how to take care of themselves, and we're there to mess it up sometimes and there to fix it sometimes. And, as Dr. Tarby could attest, that's why bee research is so popular now. It's a growing field. There's numerous issues out there, and we're constantly learning from these honeybees. There's so much we don't know and so much to look forward to learning.
So the message here is not necessarily about reading the books, but read the beehive.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Tim in South Hills. Tim, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Tim. Tim, are you there? Can you hear us?
Hello?
Yes, Tim. You're on the air. Welcome. You're on with David Tarpey and Steve Rapaski.
Well, I was just wondering what their thoughts were. I see the decline in the bee population. Now, I'm not thinking that the sky is falling, but I think the decline in the bee population is a much bigger problem than global warming at this point. And I find it interesting that, the government now is getting involved and is trying to stem the loss of the honeybees. I was wondering what their views on that were.
Well, and I would refer to David Tarpey on that one. When Tim says that this is a much bigger issue than, say, global warming, we've talked about the decline in the honeybee population, which has been cut by it's now a third of what it once was immediately after World War II. At the rate that it is declining, how do you see that impacting our food supply?
Well, those are all very big questions. I totally, totally agree that there are big factors, big and small, at play here. Again, I think those statistics of the number of managed beehives is not something that's going to continue to zero because they're so needed and they're so relied upon in commercial production agriculture. What is at issue is that we're kind of at a razor margin as to the number of colonies that we have meeting the pollination demands that we have in agriculture. But back to the caller's question, really was about kind of a broader issue of the environment and how pollinators and the perceived decline in pollinators, not just honeybees. Is something that's very tangible, and it is as alarming as things like global warming, and in fact, it may be indicative of overall global climate change. Case in point is the increased urbanization of our society and of our landscape. How do pollinators fit into an ever-increasing urbanized landscape? We're actually here at NC State University doing some research on how urbanization can be affecting not just honeybees, but other pollinators as well. And there are some potential benefits, actually, of increased urbanization on bees because a lot of homes, people plant lots of varieties of different flowers in their gardens. So there can actually be benefits to increased urbanization as well as some detriments as well. So exactly how pollinators fit in to the changing environment is something that we really need to figure out.
412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation with David Tarpey, whom you just heard, professor and extension apiculturist in the Department of Entomology at NC State, and Steve Rapaski, who is president of Berg Bees, joining us here in studio. Let's go to Jennifer in Edgewood. Jennifer, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thank you. You touched on just quickly a minute there about planting different varieties that would encourage pollinators. My question is, as a homeowner or urbanite living here in Pittsburgh, what are the top couple of things that are the most detrimental to these pollinators, and what can we do to increase their population, just in simple things right now?
Great question.
That's a very good question, and Dr. Tarpey touched on it as well. And one of the biggest things, the detriment in the urban areas, is the use of chemicals. Whether we're putting a dust on our garden, or whether we're putting chemicals on our lawn to eliminate dandelions and clovers. Dandelions is one of the top food choices right after the maples for honeybees in early spring, and we encourage dandelion growth. Your neighbors may not like it, but that's one of the best things out there for honeybees first thing in the spring. The clovers are the same thing. The more chemicals we toss on a lawn, we're not just taking away the dandelions and the clovers. We're destroying the beneficial microbes that are in the soil, other pollinators that aren't honeybees, whether it's butterflies, native bee populations. Those are all affected. So certainly stop using chemicals. And then as far as what we can do is plant a pollinator-friendly garden. Even edge your garden with a pollinator-friendly flowers, around your yard. Anything you could do that's pollinator-friendly. Stop, mowing the clovers as often, or dandelions, planting things like echinacea, liatris, those types of things. Those are what the average homeowner can do besides keeping a hive of honeybees in their backyard.
Jennifer, thank you.
Also mentioned,
go ahead,
Paul,
Steve.
If I
go
can,
ahead.
Sorry.
Dave.
Is that part of the president's proclamation and an ongoing effort, actually, multi-year effort through the EPA, is to really rethink the way that pesticide registration is conducted, keeping pollinators in mind, so that they're going through new strategies of testing new chemical insecticides and other pesticides for their potential direct and indirect effects on honeybees and other pollinators. So there's kind of a systematic oversight of how new chemistries are going to be introduced to the market in light of these ongoing issues.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Eddie in Squirrel Hill. Eddie, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hello, Eddie. Are you there?
Not directly related. Well,
I'm
related,
sorry, Eddie. We missed the beginning of what you were saying there. So,
to raise an issue.
Go ahead.
Related to honeybees as pollinators, and the issue is the decline, a similar decline, a drastic decline in the monarch butterfly, which is also a pollinator, and part of the problem. It's multifactorial, but part of the problem is with the agricultural chemical companies that spray and use Roundup Ready and those kinds of insecticides, and they kill all the milkweed plants, which the monarchs feed on. It's industrial agriculture, and the insensitivity and the focus simply on profit. It's more than that. But anyway, earlier this year, I contacted the Department of Transportation in Pennsylvania, and I suggested to them, after doing some research, that they plant wildflowers, of course, which would be good for bees too, in the medium strips along the turnpike and other areas that they control, which is hundreds and hundreds of miles of planting area. And I got shuttled around from one person to another. I spoke to about four or five people, and then finally I gave up when the last one turned me down. And I gave people some articles to read, which they did do. Anyway, I'd like a comment from your guest about the issue of wildflower plantings along state roads in Pennsylvania and how it might impact both monarchs as well as bee populations.
That's a good question, Eddie. And David Tarpey, we've talked about what's being done at the federal level, but obviously what Eddie's referring to would be administered at the state level. Are you seeing as urgent a state-level response as there is at the federal level? And you are in a state in North Carolina where there are all these amazing flowers that grow in the medians down there. That's a real treat for people driving through your state.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm not privy to the DOT in Pennsylvania and initiatives that they have going on, but There are many, many states, North Carolina included, that are either heavily engaged or very strongly looking at programs such as this, what your caller mentioned, for beneficial insects, not just pollinators, but monarchs and other beneficials like parasitoid wasps that can help keep pest populations down. So using those byways and the land there is a double benefit, not just to help the local environment and those types of beneficial insects, but also because it cuts down on their mowing costs, right? Now, one thing that's very important to realize is that you plant a lot of bee-friendly flowers in the median of a very fast-moving interstate, that can actually be problematic for bees crossing through the path of those cars, right? So there needs to be a smart way to implement those types of things. And so just planting them anywhere is not necessarily going to be beneficial, but exactly where we plant and taking advantage of that, I think, is something that a lot of states are looking into and actively doing.
Yeah, here in Pennsylvania, we actually had started basic conversations with the Pennsylvania State Beekeeping Association, Charlie Forsek, our president, and a few of our other people there, higher-ups, have met with PennDOT and are starting discussions. West Virginia, our neighboring state, actually passed legislation similar to North Carolina where there's no mows in the median area. Certainly, there's some safety issues in some areas. But, yeah, we're starting that conversation here in Pennsylvania as well. So those are very good ideas.
Pat from Aliquippa, last a quick comment or question from you. You're on the air. Pat, you need to turn your radio down. And, Pat, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
My comment was related to the same thing that somebody said before about growing the clover and things in your lawn. And I was wondering, is there any way they could approach it kind of from the idea of people setting aside an area in their lawn and calling it like a bee sanctuary? And you don't have to have your whole lawn, you know, clover or flowers, but for people who are so big on having just the green lawn, say, well, just set aside a portion of your lawn and kind of start it that way, and maybe that will be a little easier for people to accept as far as changing,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
their mindset.
Absolutely.
What about that, Steve?
A lot of people do that, even if it's, you know, every square foot helps. So certainly if you want the clean and green lawn and you want to set aside a small portion, every little bit for the honeybee and other pollinators will certainly help.
And thank you for that call, Pat. We need to wrap this up. Steve, when it comes to colony collapse, how are honeybees in this area doing?
We're holding our own. We're certainly losing honeybees every winter, similar to every other state. Last year wasn't as bad as previous years. We lost somewhere around 30% of our losses. We're holding our own. Backyard beekeepers are continuing to increase. You know, we make up 80% of the beekeepers nationwide. So we're doing okay, but certainly we're not taking our eye off the ball, and we're paying attention to the work that Dr. Tarpey's doing and other researchers across the United States.
Steve Rapaski is president of Berg Bees, and also joining us, David Tarpey, professor and extension apiculturist in the Department of Entomology at NC State. Thank you both for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, sports reporter Brady McCullough brings us the latest on the NCAA's rules restricting athletes from profiting from their names and likenesses. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.